This is Only a Game. I'm Karen Given. It was the fall of 2014. Brenda Tracy had just turned 40, and she was in crisis. After years of trying to ignore what had happened to her during the early morning hours of June 24th, 1998, she'd finally started seeing a therapist.
So I felt like I'd opened Pandora's box, and I didn't know what I was going to do, and I didn't know how to find closure. So one night, while I was, you know, angry and trying to figure this out, I thought about Coach Riley.
Mike Riley had been the coach of the Oregon State football team back in 1998. He left for the NFL the following year, and after a few seasons in the pros, he was coaching at Oregon State again.
And I thought, well, I don't like him. I've been angry with him for all these years. Maybe I could find healing through him.
Brenda knew she couldn't just walk into Riley's office and say, "Remember me from 16 years ago?" So instead, she turned to Google.
And as I was reading about him, I was literally reading years and years and years of articles about what a great man he was. And that didn't resonate with me at all.
One article among the dozens chastised Riley for his handling of a player accused of domestic violence.
And I clicked on the reporter and I said, "See, Coach Riley's not a great guy. This is what happened to me." And I just wrote an angry email to someone. I didn't even know who it was.
The reporter was John Canzano, a columnist for The Oregonian.
I almost fell off the couch because it's not what you expect. It's not the narrative that you get on Mike Riley.
This is the moment when I would usually pause to warn you that parts of Brenda's story are very difficult to hear. In truth, parts of Brenda's story are so difficult to hear that I can't put them on the radio. Still, this story involves sexual violence and is definitely not for everyone.
Essentially, she was saying, you know, "Mike Riley, I don't trust him. He's not a reputable person, and he didn't support me in 1998 when I was gang raped."
In 1998, Brenda Tracy accused four men, including two Oregon State football players, of gang rape. But for reasons we'll get into a little later, she didn't agree to testify in court. After the charges were dropped, Coach Riley gave the Oregon State players a one-game suspension and described their actions as, quote, "a bad choice."
He was supposed to be a good guy. He was supposed to be building men in a football program. I don't know how gang rape is a bad choice, and I didn't understand the one-game suspension. I mean, are we good people if we don't do the right thing?
But as far as John Canzano knew, Mike Riley was a good person. Everyone thought so.
You know, this is not a guy who is even using profanity on the football field. He rode his bicycle to practice. Very folksy, very home down, cares about kids. You know, here was a guy, if anybody was going to be an advocate for a survivor, it was going to be Mike Riley.
Brenda agreed to meet John for coffee in the lobby of a downtown Portland high-rise.
She had in her hands a manila folder, and inside of it was the case file for her gang rape. You could tell it wasn't a fresh copy. It was something that she had carried around. As she told her story, I almost felt like she expected me to not believe her.
But John did believe Brenda right from the start, and there was something else he took from that meeting.
It wasn't going away for her. It wasn't ending for her. And I didn't know that I could necessarily play a role in helping her get a resolution. But, you know, she stood up and I hugged her and I told her, "You've got a story. This is a story."
And I said, "John, what story? Seriously, who cares? Nobody cared then. Why would they care now?" He's like, "No, I think you could help someone." And I said, "Fine, put my name and my face on it." And that's how it happened.
Brenda told John that she saw herself as a victim, but John Canzano saw something else.
I said, "She's going to be governor." And I said that before we even wrote the first piece, because I just felt like she had something. There was something to her that was much bigger than anything that had ever happened to her.
So here's what happened to Brenda, or at least here are the details we can put on the radio.
I was sexually assaulted by four men. I believe I was drugged, so I was in and out of consciousness for my attack, which lasted about 6 hours. And I know this from the police report. I then went the next morning and I got a rape kit at the hospital. I made a report to the police. All four men were arrested and charged. They were all facing 20 years in prison. But because two of them played for Oregon State University, the backlash was quick. Immediately people said, "Who is she? Why is she lying? Why is she trying to ruin these young men's football careers?" I started receiving death threats. Given the pressure, and then also the DA saying I didn't have a good case, the DA said it was a he said, she said, I dropped the charges. And then my community said, see, we told you she's a liar, because if she was really raped, she would prosecute.
And this is where that case file comes in, the one Brenda carried around in a tattered manila folder, because according to the police report, Brenda had a really good case. All four men had admitted to sexual contact with Brenda. They had also admitted that during those 6 hours, she'd said no many times and begged one of the men to stop.
They said, did you force her to do this? Yes, I did, but it wasn't rape. I mean, it was a slam dunk case when you talk to prosecutors.
John Canzano did talk to prosecutors. And to be precise, they told him that there's no such thing as a slam dunk when it comes to prosecuting sexual assault cases. But this was pretty close. But Brenda says no one told her that.
The district attorney's office should have put their arm around her and said, look, we're in this together. Let's get you the counseling you need. And let's get these guys off the streets. And instead, you know, when she said, I don't think I can do this, they just said, okay, and they moved along. And that didn't serve the community, it didn't serve Brenda, it didn't serve anybody but that football program.
In his investigation, John found that the district attorney's office, the police, and the university had a history of holding annual meetings to discuss how to handle cases like these. John spoke with prosecutors and with university representatives. He even managed to speak with one of the men Brenda had accused, though he still denied that what happened that morning was rape. At what point in your investigation did you contact Coach Riley on this?
Pretty early on, because, you know, I expected, in my experience, it was going to be very difficult to get him to make a comment. And I got a surprise like 2 or 3 days into this when he returned a call himself. And he owned it and just said, I had no idea.
Unlike the university he worked for, John says Riley never saw a copy of the police report. But Brenda Tracy didn't know that. All she knew is that a coach, a man charged with building young men, had described her gang rape as, quote, a bad choice.
I can rationalize a rapist. I can even rationalize bad people. They do bad things and they hurt people. But I can't rationalize good people who don't do the right thing.
On November 14th, 2014, Brenda Tracy's story appeared in The Oregonian. It was the first time she was publicly identified. This time, Brenda's community believed her.
You know what? Amazingly, they did. I was really surprised. Because this is before the Me Too movement. This is before all the scandals we've been seeing in sports, Baylor and all that stuff. But it was amazing. My community this time believed me, and they reached out to me. They loved on me.
I think you had a lot of Oregon State fans who were saying how disappointed they were with the administration at that time. You had a university saying we could have done better, and a football program saying we could have and should have done better.
671 comments were left on that story. One was signed by Coach Mike Riley. At what point did you become aware that Mike Riley had commented on the story?
Pretty early on. And initially I thought, that can't be real. That has to be somebody faking. Who does that, right?
It was real. Here's what it said. Today's column by John Canzano regarding the circumstances of sexual assault on Ms. Brenda Tracy is shocking, and her suffering saddens me. It is with heartfelt compassion that I will reach out to Ms. Tracy and offer to assist her. I hope we have the opportunity to meet in the near future, and if she feels comfortable, I invite her to speak to the football program. Her experiences would be a powerful message, and one I know our whole team would take to heart. Mike Riley, head football coach, Oregon State University.
There are so many coaches in today's world of college football that would claim amnesia. They'd lie. But here was a coach who was willing to say, you know what, I could have done better, and I want to meet her, and I want to tell her that in person, and I want her to talk to my team. I didn't think it was lip service from him.
We tried for months to schedule an interview with Mike Riley for this story, and while he told us that he'd love to talk, we were never able to make it happen. In the months after the article and the Oregonian's follow-up investigation were published, John and Brenda spoke often at town hall meetings and community gatherings.
The room was always full, but it was full of women. event, she would say, "I wish we could get to men because this is an issue that men need to solve."
And this is an important point. When Brenda says this is an issue men need to solve, she's not saying the obvious, that men need to stop committing crimes of sexual violence. Yes, the vast majority of sexual crimes are committed by men, but the vast majority of men will never commit a sexual crime.
It's like 10% of our male population that are committing crimes of sexual violence, which means that 90% of our men don't. But the 90% can be complicit in their silence. They can be complicit in their inaction. So I need men to get involved. I need them to become active. If the 90% of the population, men, women, LGBTQ, however you want to identify yourself as a human, would push back on the 10%, maybe we could gain some ground on this. Maybe we could stop this travesty.
When John Canzano hears Brenda Tracy speaking like this, he realizes that his first assessment of her was wrong, really wrong.
I now realize Governor was too small. You know, like, I think she's got a bigger role. I don't know if it's as a lawmaker or as somebody who's just going to change the viewpoint that men have about women.
Through her advocacy work, Brenda has helped change the laws in Oregon to extend the statute of limitations and protect the rights of rape survivors. And she's spoken to thousands of college athletes to bring them in on her mission. But to do all that, Brenda first needed to reach men with her message, and that wasn't going to happen as long as women were the only ones showing up to her talks. And this is where Coach Mike Riley comes back into the story. 2 years after John Canzano's articles were published, in the summer of 2016, Riley wasn't coaching at Oregon State anymore. He had taken the head coaching job at Nebraska.
And I actually didn't think that I would hear from him. I was a little bit of a PR nightmare for him. I was talking a lot about how much I didn't like him in the media. But he reached out to me from Nebraska and invited me to still come there.
After a brief phone call that she describes as superficial, Brenda Tracy flew to Nebraska to speak to Coach Riley and his football team.
His assistant was bringing me in, and he kind of pointed at an office. And I remember I froze in my tracks, and I said, "Is he in there?" And the man said, "Oh, my God, yes, he is. Are you okay?" And I took a big, deep breath, and I was like, "Yeah, I'm okay." But then I had to tell my brain, "Tell your right foot to move. Tell your left foot to move." Like, I was having to tell myself to, like, move your feet, Brenda. Walk forward, Brenda. And I got into the door when he looked up. And I'll never forget this, but his face became bright. He smiled and he said, "Hi, Brenda." And I immediately began to cry. And we hugged. And I cried on his shoulder for about a minute. It was amazing. And then I sat down and I told him how much I hated him for 16 years.
And how did he take that?
Wow. Coach Mike Riley is a lesson for all of us in accountability. He held himself accountable to me. He apologized to me. There's a big difference between "I'm sorry," period, and "I'm sorry, but." And Coach Riley did the first. And it meant everything to me. And it was a huge moment in my life. And it did a lot for my healing.
A few minutes later, Coach Riley took Brenda into the team room where 120 football players had gathered to hear her story.
Coach Riley stood right off to the side of me where all of his players could see him. He was holding himself accountable to them. And I told them my story. And I didn't leave anything out. I didn't sugarcoat anything. I was brutally honest and brutally graphic. And I even said to them at one point, "I hated your coach more than my rapist." And they all looked at him. He didn't flinch. And they all looked back at me because they didn't know what to do with that. And I could tell that they were uncomfortable. I was uncomfortable too.
That night, the story of Brenda Tracy and Mike Riley's unlikely reconciliation was all over the news. And word got around to other athletic departments at other universities.
Like, another school called, and then another school, and another school, and another school. And it's just been kind of going now for, like, what, 2.5 years now?
Every time she speaks to a team or athletic department, Brenda makes herself and her audience uncomfortable on purpose.
Because the thing is that if I say to you, "I was gang raped by 4 men for 6 hours, I don't know what that means to you. And most likely, you're going to sugarcoat it in your own mind so that you can be comfortable with what happened to me. But I need you to be uncomfortable. I need you to recognize that I'm the victim of a crime. And so I have to tell you in graphic detail what that means. And that's what I do. And then when I talk to you about my life now, my advocacy, then you have no choice but to see me as a victim who has now become a survivor.
Sometimes a player will come up to Brenda after her talk and disclose that he, too, is a survivor. Often it's the first time he's disclosed to anyone. Brenda says she lives in a lot of trauma, but she says it's worth it.
So in all of my talks, when I sit in the room with these men, there's a point where I say, I'm not here because I think you're the problem. I'm here because I know you're the solution. If women could stop sexual violence, we would have already done it. Like, I wouldn't be a gang rape survivor. The women before me would have made sure that that didn't happen to me.
And how do the players react to that idea?
Oh, they love it. I think most of the time we spend our time kind of wagging our finger at them, telling them what not to do, telling them that they're their problem. And I'm like the first woman they've seen that says, I'm here to tell you what you can do. And they love it.
These days, Brenda travels from school to school, speaking at as many as she can. She has trouble remembering what time zone she's in. She's given up her career as a nurse to focus on her advocacy work full time. But still, she says there simply isn't enough time to fulfill every speaking request.
I don't solicit myself to any school. Every single school that I've been to, every single program that I've worked with, they've found me and they've invited me in. And it keeps on going. Men want to be involved. Athletes, coaches want to be involved. And that's why they keep on calling me.
Brenda Tracy has started a nonprofit. It's called Set the Expectation. We'll have a link at onlyagame.org. You're listening to Only a Game from NPR.